Oh, you're giving me like a cowgirl.
Yes, yes, yes. Gang, gang.
That's a shitty joke.
Wait, what's she? Gang, gang. She holds like a popcorn. She's holding like a hair thing. What's it called again? A hair straightener.
Yeah.
And she's putting popcorn kernels on it, and she's just holding it and just popping. But in the meantime, she's just like moving around with it. She's going like gang, gang
until
gang, gang.
Until it pops, basically.
Until it pops, yeah. And then she just puts in another one.
Well, there was this one thing I saw, and this guy just kept paying her to do, like, I don't remember what she had to say, but he just paid her to do it for 9 hours.
She does stay there for a while.
Yeah. No, she did whatever it was. I don't remember what he said or what she was supposed to do. But it was like, he's like, I'll give you, let's say, $4,000 to do it for 9 hours. And she just sat there and repeated the same action for 9 hours.
Yeah. Money well spent, I think.
I think the way she times it is she has like a small bowl of like unpopped kernels. And by the time this bowl is like all popped, then that's it. That's the end of the stream.
That's such an interesting way to do it,
man. Well, anyway, welcome back to the second episode, guys.
Sorry,
This is a GMCT podcast, episode 2.
Season 5.
There was a power struggle right then.
You want to say something? Yeah.
Okay, Nigel, you have to choose. Who do you want to do the intros, Nigel? You have to pick.
In the last podcast, I was the one on the bottom. Rob was on the top. Now I'm on the top. Rob is on the bottom. So I'm
actually
taking over.
Actually, Kira asked me like why I'm always on the top in the shorts.
What do you mean in the shorts? Everyone is at the top in the shorts.
I don't know. That's what she asked. You weren't. She was watching the shorts.
Why are you always a toppy, Robert?
Why am I always talking?
Toppy, a power top.
I'm a. What's the opposite of power?
Weakness.
I'm a Robert. I'm a weak top.
It's.
What episode are we in?
2.
Season 5, episode 2, or season 1, episode 2, depending on who you are as a viewer.
What canon you follow?
Yeah.
The multiverse series.
This is the Zack Snyder universe now. We're in the Zack Snyder era.
George Clooney is
back. Are we more dark now, or are we just less funny?
No.
We're more depressed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. what are we doing today? A couple of topics for today. The one that you guys jumped in on was talking about this new trend on Twitch and other live streaming platforms. Not yet. and then we're going to talk about... Oh, nice. Nice, dude.
It is time for Barbenheimer, baby.
Let's go. Actually,
not yet. So hold that thought. Sorry.
Bro, what else are we going to talk about?
You fucked it up. We're going to talk about the Twitch NPCs first because we already started talking about it.
I'll just keep it going.
Nigel just revealed our second topic for the day, which is going to be Barbenheimer, the two shittiest movies. I'm joking.
It's a topic of every podcast now, to be honest. So we're not reinventing the formula.
And then what was our other one? I wrote this down earlier. Oh, Nigel wants to talk about fucking some games.
Baldur's Gate 3, baby.
Let's go. I read
a little bit about it, and I still don't understand what's the problem. The problem is other game devs are like, "Yo, the game is too good. Don't think that we're going to be as good as them."
We'll talk about it. We have some thoughts. I have some thoughts. Rob probably will have some thoughts about that. But now,
we'll talk about
do you guys have some thoughts about new job opportunities in the TikTok sphere? And that is to become.
Is it a job though? I mean, you can consider it a job, but I don't know.
What does Pinky Doll do? What does Pinky Doll do? She does that all day.
She gets fucking minted out of it. I think it's a job. She makes like 2K, 3K per stream, and she streams every day. So like,
yeah, absolute job, enough. Man.
Gang, you know.
Gang, gang. Yes, yes.
All right. So I want you guys to think of. You have unlimited money to donate to this woman or this NPC. Yeah. What would you ask her to do?
The thing is, you can't ask her to do something specific. I think so, at least.
I believe you can donate on the chat and ask. Maybe not her, but other ones. There's many people doing this, right?
I think they all have like a preset of emotes beforehand. And then you can use them. So they practice. Okay. If someone is not gang, you can't just surprise them with a gang.
New question.
I think before you say, have you seen the guy who does like the Miles Morales NPC and he gets called up while he was streaming and then he goes into a tangent. Like he says some racist shit throughout the whole time and then he just comes back and he's like. It's so funny.
I would love to do an interview with someone who does it. I think it'd be really funny.
What if we do an interview with someone and they are just an NPC? Like they don't answer the questions. They answer as an NPC.
You mean I'm not going to make that joke.
But okay, if I had a lot of money to burn for my really just like 1 second of dopamine, mm-hmm. it would be for her to recite the entire Shrek trilogy. But every time Donkey is in the script, she says, Gang.
But does she say like Eddie Murphy?
Oh, maybe even better.
She just does the whole script, but she has to do it like
The impressions of
the characters.
No. Actually, no impression. It has to be actually just like the way she says it, like Pinky Doll says it, right?
Judging on what you said, I would pay her to recite the whole Fast and Furious saga or The Social Network, but I don't want to taint The Social Network, you know?
Every time when in Social Network, when Mark Zuckerberg is like to Sean Parker, you didn't have to go that rough on him. He goes, gang.
It's like, that's the life in the TikTok NPC.
Yeah.
But I'm so like, how do they get the quotes from? Like, where are those quotes from? The gang, yes.
They just come up with it.
Are you serious?
That was my question.
That's where the creativity comes in. Because
this was leading perfectly into my question, right? Into my question. Mm-hmm. So let's say it's not like you can do the length of a movie because we kind of covered that material just now. You can do a 30-second something. Come up. What are the three things you're going to do if you're like a Twitch NPC? What are your three emotes that you'll offer? And how much would you charge to do it also?
Bruh, I don't know, man. I would just have the Allahu Akbar emotes for me. That's it. I will charge 911 euros.
Jesus.
I'll be honest, man. I'm not that creative as them in terms of like, it has to be, I don't know.
It doesn't have to be original, dude. It can be anything.
I want to do the SpongeBob laugh. You know the SpongeBob laugh?
Can you do it now?
No, I won't.
Go on,
won't
do it.
In front
do
of it. Shut up.
Do
shut
it.
Up. Shut up.
Do it.
Do it.
Nigel, I'm gonna leak some shit to Huma, and then he's gonna deep fake your voice so it sounds like you said it, and then you're gonna get fired. He's like, Nigel's like, I don't need money anymore. I live off the land.
Actually, since you said that, I wanna come clean. I've been feeding all our podcast voices into an AI so I can take you out of it, and then we don't have to film Sick. Anymore. Just do
I
it
hope
with
you
Tour,
are.
Yeah.
This is the worst hour and a half in my week.
Sick. I don't know, man.
So how much would you charge for the SpongeBob thing? How much would you charge?
That'll be just 1 euro. I think that's very fair price.
But in Bulgaria, that's like 10 grand. So fair.
Shut the fuck up. And in Ireland, that's 2 euros.
You can buy like a whole cow for a
euro. Nigel, you either make money doing the SpongeBob laugh or you actually join some gang in Sofia. You know what I mean?
That's what he meant by it before the podcast. Nigel's going back to Bulgaria for vacation soon, and he said he's going back to see his friends. What he means is he's going back to break some kneecaps to get that money he's owed.
Oh,
actually, exactly speaking. Like- Speaking of going back to Bulgaria, would you like to elaborate why you're not in Bulgaria right now?
Oh, yeah, good one.
All right. All right. This was like one of the worst weeks I've ever experienced. It's like, okay, here's the thing. It's All right. So here's the thing. We bought tickets for 13th of July to travel back to Bulgaria, me and my girlfriend. And our flight is at 2:25. We're traveling with Wizz Air. And basically, we do our standard two-hour, being there 2 hours early. But unfortunately, for some reason, the trains, the airlines decided to fuck around that day. And we found out that a lot of the trains are being delayed on our way there. So we were already in the train and it just decided to stop at like one of the, I forgot which city it was, but it stopped there for like a long time. And we had to transfer one more time, but being late from the previous stop made us miss our next transfer. So we were late by 30 minutes. So we were at the airport, hour and a half. All good, right? We're still on time. But the thing is, we're so used to being on time in the airport, we just don't, it didn't click to us that, oh shit, we actually need to hurry the fuck up because they're going to close the gate. And the thing is, also my stupid mind didn't realize is that airport, the planes don't go out, wait, how to say, people should be boarded way earlier than the time says it should be. It's not 2:25, you should be in the plane. You should be in the plane already 1:30 or something like that, or like two, or
like 30 minutes before takeoff.
Yeah,
but exactly. It should even say that in your ticket though.
But that's the thing. Since we just don't realize how much time we already kind of losing, going through security, going through the passport check-ins, we got distracted by the perfumes there. We just didn't realize, oh shit, time is, we didn't know the time was like clicking. We didn't know that the gate is soon going to be closing. And what happened was, is that the thing is, we went to Eindhoven Airport, and Eindhoven Airport is a silent airport. So there's no announcements going on. Announcements only happen if somebody fucks up. It's like, then you hear this like Dutch lady say, excuse me, house, please, Mr. House, go to and gate the, here.
It's a silent airport unless you're Dutch. So if you're Dutch, they'll help you out. If not, then they're like,
yeah, no, something like that. But Either way, the thing that really fucked us up at the end was the security. So, not the security checking your baggage, but the border patrol, like, the border control, or they check passport your control. Passport control ID, whatever. And usually there's like four guys there already lined, police officers checking your stuff. And all three were full. And there's the fourth one was like the shortest line. Killian said, hey, yo, go there. Come on, let's go. We went there. But that particular police officer, this was the shortest line. There was like just three people in front of us. It was like, oh, we're going to make it. We had like 3 minutes. We didn't realize we had 3 minutes actually. But either way, the police officer that was there was checking each passport with such detail, man. I've never seen a guy look at IDs and passports like that ever. You have machines, man. It's like in front of you. He uses it, the machine. He looks at the screen. He's like, yep, you're the guy. Like, I see you. You're real. But he then, the fucking thing that annoyed me is like, he picked it up and he started looking at it like this. Like, do you understand how fucking like annoying that was? And that like slowed us by like 15 minutes by person. Either way, we ran to the gate and they said, yep, you just missed it by 1 minute. Sorry, but I was like, bro, okay, but we can just run there, right? Because it's like right there, the plane, it's not taking off. But we didn't realize it, like, yeah, but you know, the stairs are already like collapsed. You cannot like, we cannot do that anymore. I was like,
bro. Then you missed it by more than 1 minute then.
Yeah, maybe. She probably like softened the blow a bit, but.
Whoa. They don't collapse the stairs until like 15 minutes before takeoff.
The thing maybe. With the stairs, as well, it's not just like whether they pull them away, it's like though they need those stairs to go to another plane to make sure that one goes on time. So like if you let someone walk out there, it takes 5 minutes, you gotta walk up the stairs, get their seat, then they can take it away, then it delays possibly another flight, right? So it's not like, oh yeah, quickly just go, because if they do it for people, then it's gonna delay all the other flights to the airport. Because I actually had it in Eindhoven Airport before, where for some reason they had like a shortage of stairs. Okay. So we had to sit on the tarmac for an hour waiting for stairs to come.
Let's Jesus. Go.
Yeah. Because it was like one of the older Ryanair planes that didn't have the stairs built in.
How does the Netherlands have the best and also the worst airport in the world.
So Eindhoven is sick, though. It's a good airport. You just heard two negative stories about it. It's a great airport.
It's
normally normally security is like 5 minutes.
I think the security is pretty good there. You just put in your stuff, immediately go through the thing. It's pretty nice.
Normally security is pretty good. They just don't fucking care.
Yeah. So it was my first time missing a flight ever. Like first time.
That was a first attempt.
What do you mean first attempt? Oh yeah. Oh shit. Yeah. Okay. Let me get to it. So, right. We felt very devastated, right? Because it's like, I mean, at the end of the day, we shouldn't be devastated because it's like, all right, sure. We spent a bit of money. We missed the flight. It's not the end of the world. So we rebooked tickets. We went to the service desk like, hey, we missed our flight. What do we do from here? The lady said, oh yeah, you just pay 85 euros per ticket to rebook another flight because, it is our fault that we missed it, right? So it's not like refunded or anything. So we had to pay for new tickets. And luckily, they booked us 4 days later. I think it was the upcoming Sunday that we got tickets for. And same time, I was like, sick. All right, cool. Well, not that bad. We can live with it. And we said to ourselves, all right, we got to be there like 3 hours early, maybe four even. So Sunday comes up. And then, like, we did the thing. So we woke up at like 6 a.m. We caught the train, one of the first trains or like third train or something at 7. And we were there at 10 o'clock. Keep in mind, our flight is at 2:25. So we're really early just to make sure that we don't miss it. We're fully concentrated to not fuck up again. And we go through everything. And now we just sit there and wait. We wait. We suddenly get an announcement. Holy shit, an announcement in the silent Eindhoven airport that our flight has been delayed by like 2 hours, which is sick, which is absolutely sick, man. Amazing. Like right when we're like super early, that's when they delay it. You know what I mean? But when we're late, they don't delay anything. It's all perfect, you know? And either way, that fucking pissed me off. So got delayed. We waited until, I think like 4 o'clock. And then we got an announcement. They're saying, well, flight to Sofia has been canceled because there's no planes, no plane availability. It's like, how the fuck do you not have planes?
They forgot that they haven't invented the plane in Bulgaria yet.
Bro, it's Wizz Air. It's Hungarian. It's a Hungarian company, but like,
it's Wizz. How the fuck? They took a Wizz with it.
Me and Kalina, we were like, we were just laughing. We were like, no way. They, like in the span of 3 days, this happened. You know, we missed our flight. And then the next one we got in, got canceled. And we were like, well, this was insane.
Hopefully third time's a charm.
Yeah, hopefully. Jesus Christ.
Were you flying from Eindhoven
Imagine the third time we just crashed, right? That would be crazy.
This is some final destination shit.
Yeah,
dude.
Exactly. You cheated death twice.
So here's the thing. You really want to get in that flight?
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
You want
fuck
to,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bro, I want to see my family, bro. It's insane.
You might never see him again.
I spent, what, 200 euros already for that flight?
But you got a refund of 250, right? From Wizz Air each.
Yeah. We got 417.
You got Wizz credits though, right?
I got Wizz credits.
No, that's not right, dude. That's not right.
What do you mean?
That's against European law. We'll talk about it afterwards. We'll run.
No. Wait. I know what you mean. It's cash. They gave us. Okay. But here's the thing. Here's what was my thought process is that we could. So we basically got the Wizz credits and then we got new plane tickets, but we also requested for the remainder of the money for them to give it back. So like, yeah, that's what we did. But we still haven't heard from them yet. Yeah, you can request those Wizz credits that you get. You can request for them to convert it into money.
I mean, they should be immediately converted into money.
It should just be money.
But, well,
I fucked up then.
Anyway.
On the record, I fucked up.
Let's hope you get to Bulgaria as well.
No, I think we need to do who's to blame here. We need to point. There needs to be some finger pointing.
It's definitely Mark Rutte.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move on.
Yeah, cool. That's it.
All right. It's time for three white guys. Well, we're not white, actually. You're not white. Three white looking guys to talk about Barbenheimer, original content.
You're kind of like
I'm like cappuccino.
Nigel looks malnourished.
Bro.
That's nothing to do with his ethnicity. It's just.
Bro.
That's an observation.
I haven't seen the sun in so long, man.
That's not what malnourished is.
No.
Well, that is kind of true because it's been fucking rainy for like a week and a half here. Yeah. I don't know if it's the same in Ireland, but it's.
Yeah.
It's Western European summer, bro.
I got summer into London, though, when I was there last week.
Dope.
You got summer there?
Sunburned. Again.
Oh, sunburned.
Mm. On the same arm that I got sunburned on last time.
Gang.
Nice.
That's pretty good.
Yes. Okay, so now it's time for three guys to talk about Barbenheimer. It's never been done before. I thought we were
just going to talk about Barbie.
Okay, we can.
I thought it would have been enough to just talk about Barbie.
Oh, you did it. He did it, guys. He did the obvious thing.
He did the thing.
Let's start with which one we preferred. I'll go first. I preferred Oppenheimer.
Same.
I preferred Barbie.
Bruh.
This is good.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, this is great for the content. Can you cut this bit out?
I'll tell you why you preferred it. It's because you related so much to Alan. That's why.
Whoa! Bruh.
You
didn't have to go that rough on it, dude.
While I was watching, and Ken shows up, Ryan Gosling was like, oh, that's literally me. And then when Alan showed up, Nigel was like, yo, that's literally me.
Bro, dude.
I'm just Alan.
Yeah, dude. I was really vibing with Alan, man.
Wait, that's not even a joke? Oh, my God. Okay, so for context, my mom and I watched it together. I obviously didn't watch it with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We watched both movies together. The Oppenheimer experience was pretty interesting, but we'll get into that later. So let's talk about Barbie first.
You want to talk about Barbie first? Okay. So I think it was good. I think it was 6 out of 10, I would say, as a movie overall. It was fun. It was funny, but it wasn't like clever, which I don't think it needed to be.
Yeah, same. It was fine for me. It is now labeled fully as a comedy, like nothing else.
Right.
And I don't know. Here's my hot take on the situation.
He hates women. Watch.
It's made by a bunch of woke liberals.
It's actually the opposite.
He thought it was too conservative.
They were trying to give us this image or this message that women can do better. Women are as equal or maybe better to men. And I already know that. I don't understand the people that went into Barbie and then they left like, oh my God, my whole perspective on women has changed. I'm like, bruh.
But I think there was a bit more nuance to the message. I think it was very in your face, the whole message thing, right? But yeah. I think that when you look at the kind of discourse online, and I have a thing about this with Oppenheimer too, where there's been some horrible shit said about some people in that movie, but we'll get to that later. Where like there are people who came out and were like, what the fuck are they doing? What is this message? Why are they trying to tell me I suck? Like guys saying that. But there was also a message in there for men where it's like through the Ken's plot, right? Where it's like you men don't have to be monster trucks and horses and dominant all the time, right? It's totally acceptable to be. I thought that was interesting, and I also thought like the flip side of that was interesting. I do think it didn't handle it with a great deal of nuance. It was like just there, right in front of you. Like other movies have done other messages that are a bit more subtle, but
I believe that Greta Gerwig's earlier movies, which also were mostly about women. They dealt with the message in a better way than Barbie. I did like the set piece. It was pretty insane. Like and they filmed a lot of it in there. The thing that I didn't expect is they mentioned the real world a lot, but like you see the real world like for like 20 minutes of the whole movie. I did like, I mean, The thing that I also don't understand, or maybe it just came off that way, that how was a movie about Barbie have like the funniest character to be Ken?
Yeah.
Because I'm just Ken.
But to be honest, like the choreography, like the things that they made Ryan Gosling do is just hilarious. It's just.
Yeah.
And he, really well, I told Nigel when I was watching it, he looked like he was about to laugh every time he said something. Yeah.
And, but guys, also another thing, can you believe he drives? He actually drives in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but yeah.
I love those memes. I love all the memes where it's like a heart. It's like Willem Dafoe in the lighthouse where he's like, that one. And it's like the 9-year-old girls who are going to see Barbie when there's when there's 20 guys in leather jackets screaming, I drive every time Ryan Gosling appears on screen. We love it so much.
When he was on the screen, I mean, everyone was laughing in the theater where we were watching it. So I was like, okay, I'm not laughing because I think men are funnier than women or something like that. Because that's what I was like. Oh shit, am I a sexist? Because I think he's funnier than Barbie. But at the end of the day, everyone was like, yeah, he was the funniest part of the whole movie. And they dedicated the whole song and the whole insane choreography that they did and the battle at the end, like just to the Kens, which, you know, I understand he was funny, but yeah.
I do think the funniest Barbie was, I can't think of the name of it.
Kate McKinnon?
I couldn't think of her Barbie name. Yeah, I thought she was the funniest Barbie.
Who did she play again? I forgot.
The Ugly Barbie.
Oh, yeah, she was really good. She was really fun.
Me and Rob know her from her SNL days. So she's pretty hilarious.
The part where they think some of the Kens are approaching the house and then she like just bends up against the wall to look like she's part of the house. I actually pissed myself. That was so funny. But yeah, no, I think having talked about it now, it's probably better than we gave it credit for right at the beginning. Like, I think it was a good movie. Like, I think it's probably still going to be like top 3, top 4 movies, like blockbuster movies of the year.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But I was telling people that I'm not going to, like, I don't feel the urge to watch it again.
Absolutely. Same here. Nigel?
Like, yeah. I saw it and then I'm like,
hey,
yeah,
man.
It happened.
Hey, man. All I got to say, Barbie, good vibes. Oppenheimer, depressing vibes. That's all I got to say.
I mean, if you think about it, both movies talk about real life issues.
Yeah, real life issues. But at the end of the day, it's just good vibes, man. It's just a nice message. It was a very charming movie, in my opinion. Really fun. It just made me feel good. That's the thing. That's what I go to movies for, just to feel good, have fun.
It made me feel so very little. Actually, like it made me really? Feel nothing. I laughed at it. It was funny.
Yeah.
But I laughed at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was waiting the whole time, like, okay, something's going to happen. Something's going to happen. And then with Dan, I was like, is that it? Really?
Damn, like, you guys.
No, but it was good, though. It was good. Like, you know, not every movie has to make you feel something, but
I think the marketing team did an insane job for the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't
for what the movie came out to be. I'm like, that marketing team deserve another raise.
Yo, I think that you could have spent like $5,000 in marketing, and you would have got the same hype. Yes. You know who deserves a raise? Whoever decided to release 2 movies in the same day. Whoever made that call, that's who deserves it. That person deserves probably like $500 million because those 2 movies probably made more that amount extra because of it. To be honest, like Barbie's gonna hit a bill this week. That's
really
this
so week far, already. So far, Barbie is in the box office. It's killing Oppenheimer.
Yeah, but that's expected, right? Just for many reasons, like Oppenheimer's 18s or R in America, they always make about 40% less than movies below 18s. So it's just Oppenheimer is still performing. Like, if you look at the demographics that Oppenheimer can hit versus what Barbie can hit, Oppenheimer is performing like the same. By standard stuff.
I did see an interesting and also very hilarious thing is that a lot of Middle Eastern countries banned the Barbie movie. And it made me think there's nothing, like there's no kiss in the movie. There's nothing, like there's no sex scenes. There's nothing that attacks the Islamic figures. And then I was like, oh, is it because it shows strong women? And there was like, nah, don't believe that. We don't talk about this.
I mean, I don't think that's an unbelievable thing. But also, I mean, she goes to the gynecologist at the end.
So?
Like, is that not a thing? No?
Like, I don't think that would be a reason to, like, cut it away.
But have you heard about... Okay, so let's get into... Let's get into Oppenheimer a little bit. I want to hear from Nigel about why you think Barbie's better. And not, like, give me reasons, not just vibes.
Well, here's the thing. It's this is all personal taste, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, sure.
I loved both movies. I really loved both movies. In my opinion, it's just, for me personally, it's just all the just the nice atmosphere and chemistry that the entire movie had. It's like with the all different actors. We're talking about Barbie. Sorry.
Okay.
About Barbie. The really fun set pieces with, you know, the Battle of the Kens, the dancing, some of Margot Robbie's like more, you know, intimate scenes that were just a bit, in my opinion, kind of weird scenes, but they were still pretty like well acted and stuff like that. And, I'm not going to say that Barbie is like a better quality. It's, in my opinion, in terms of quality of, acting, cinematics and stuff like that, you know, Oppenheimer's way above, but I just preferred Barbie more in general about those things.
All right, fair enough.
I still do think if you, because you talked about the acting just now, if you rank performances across the two movies, mm-hmm. Ryan Gosling is still third for me.
Who's
out of second. Overall performance? I would say Cillian Murphy, obviously.
Performance.
No, number one.
Well, you said he's three, top three.
Yeah, Gosling is three. I would say Cillian Murphy is number one and RDJ is two.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. also.
Such a different take on any character he's played ever.
I agree.
In my opinion, he was like the second main of like of Oppenheimer. Like it was Cillian Murphy and Robert Downey Jr. Like, they were the two main characters of the movie. Even though you see Robert Downey Jr. like not very a lot.
Little. He's in it for maybe 15 minutes, I guess.
I think a little bit more, but like there's the whole middle section where you don't see him whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then he just comes back after they drop the bomb.
It's like him and Japan are the villain of the movie.
But bro, the cast in that movie is insane.
Yeah. Dude, every time in the when I see someone that I've watched, you know, like watched from either Sex Education or Good Time, I like to say, you know, that's the guy from that movie. And then someone else pops and it's like, oh, that's the guy from that series. And Colleen is like, okay, can I watch the movie, man?
I'm not gonna lie. When I realized that Gary Oldman played President Truman, like, my jaw dropped, dude. My jaw.
Same. Dude, yeah. same, dude.
I realized it like halfway through the scene is what happened. I didn't like.
He was not. I don't know if he was announced or anything, but I didn't know shit about it.
No,
he wasn't.
And I was just sitting there. Well, spoiler alert, me, Nigel, and Nina were high as fuck when we were watching it. And when he showed up, I just splurted, holy shit, that's Gary Oldman.
And Nigel still didn't realize it was him till after the scene. You said that.
And I don't know. I think because I was high, maybe. When I remember the first time I watched the movie when I was high, for some reason, I just remember watching it in 3D, even though we watched it normally.
It's not even available in 3D, I think.
Exactly. So like, I don't know why I don't remember anything vividly from the movie when I watched it the first time. That's why I went to see it a second time, completely sober. And I was able to connect a lot of dots and understand a lot of things. There's still a lot of Christopher Nolan stuff where like people are talking the whole time and like, you're supposed to like understand astrophysicist at some scenes, but I think that's also the charm of them, just watching people who like seem to be understanding of this like holier than thou concept that you just don't understand. Like, holy shit.
That's used, I think, to illustrate like how much of a genius everyone that's speaking is, you know what I mean?
Yeah
Like, I think it's there so you don't question whether they're right. Like, about the factual shit, like, they're just right. And it's the morality that you should question. I think that's basically why that's there.
What?
And so I think there was a quote from Leonardo DiCaprio. He was asked what his Inception is about. He's like, I don't know, man. I just read my lines.
That had to be everyone working on Tenet. That had to be everyone working on Tenet. Yeah.
I saw that Tenet is like his lowest rated movie, and I was surprised. Okay.
So I was about to bring that up, because for me, Oppenheimer places quite high on my favorite Nolan films.
Same. I know your favorite is The Dark Knight. I know your favorite is The Dark Knight.
But do you know what my second favorite is?
Your second favorite?
Yeah, it's not Oppenheimer.
Is it Inception?
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. It's also pretty good.
Then Oppenheimer for me, number three.
To me, to be honest, Oppenheimer is number one.
Ooh.
That is the best Nolan movie I've ever seen. I've seen Inception, I've seen Interstellar, and I've seen Tenet, The Dark Knight as well. Maybe if I see the whole trilogy, then my opinion would change. But
you can skip Rises. Something. You can skip Rises.
There is something about Oppenheimer that just, like, when I finished it, and because I went to watch it alone first, and then Ava, my girlfriend, also wanted to see it. I was like, I'm going to go with you.
But you've seen it three times?
No, twice.
Okay.
But I'm ready to watch it a third time. That's how much I liked it. There's something that just connected with me. I'm like, damn, I really like this movie. The cast also was insane. Like every 5 minutes, it felt like the Avengers of...
Yeah, dude.
That's
what I'm about to say.
People know, this? Like the elements table.
Have you seen this meme where it's like, Oppenheimer post credit scene, and it's fucking Albert Einstein, and then he's like working out equals MC squared for the first time, and then it just pops up like Einstein will return.
We talked about that as well. It was like, what if in the post-credit scene, someone is like, oh, are you going to talk astrophysics without the person who invented physics? And then it's just Isaac Newton.
Yeah.
They just play the Wonder Woman music, and then it cuts out.
I kind of love if it was that clip of, if you guys, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a clip of Trisha Paytas and Ethan Klein. And she's like, whoever invented gravity should have just like not bothered. and then like Oppenheimer's in the room, and he just turns to them, and he's like, "What?" And then it's like Oppenheimer will return to turn off gravity, and that's the sequel.
So Nigel sent me this thing with like the Nolan cinematic universe, and it's just like movies about
the roadmap scientists. Like 2024, Ian equals MC squared, 2025, something
and
else.
To be fair, I would watch it. I think, I don't know. I always have a preference for movies that are about real stuff, like a biopic. Yeah. Like when you tell me, any movie you tell me is like, oh, it's based on real events, I'm like, okay, I'm interested now. Recently, I watched the Tetris movie, even though it wasn't that great, but I was very interested in it because it's all real events. Yeah. Same thing with why I love The Social Network. It's my favorite movie it is based on real events. It's not, I'm not saying what happened is exactly what happens, but I just like to know that, you know, this thing, I was alive when this, well, I wasn't alive, but like people were alive when this story was happening. This is not fiction. This is real. Well, for The Social Network, but not for Oppenheimer.
Well, for bits of it, when he at right at the end. By the way, I will have to say, they did an amazing job of making everyone look fucked up at the end when they're all old. Like everyone looked fucking awful, really bad. Like genuinely, Oppenheimer looked like he could die at any second.
I like that they made Cillian Murphy look so old, but then Edward Teller, the other guy who invented the H bomb, they just put gray dye in his hair, and that was it.
But he was a little younger, right? He was a little younger.
I guess
the whole time, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I wanted to go back real quick and say, dude, me, Umam, and a friend of ours, Nino, he bought these like weed gummies, and we got them before watching Oppenheimer. And I took half a bite. Movie goes on. I took the rest of the bite, like probably 30 minutes in. I thought, this is chump shit, right? I can take another one. And I just ate. I wanted to take this a second one, but I wanted to take a half of it. But I took so much that I was like, I might as well eat it whole. So I took two gummies in the span of like 40 minutes. And dude, when the moment of them setting up the bomb was happening, my high was starting to hit. I'm starting to like, oh shit, it's about to happen. Like I them setting the bomb. Like
When the bomb exploded, like that's when it hit me because I zoned out after that. Yeah. After the noise.
No, sorry. I just realized something.
Yeah.
So when we were in Barbie,
mm-hmm.
we heard the bomb go off. I know it's a meme. I'm not shooting you. When we watched Barbie, we heard the bomb go off because we went to see Barbie and the cinema was fucking packed because they had Oppenheimer at 8, Barbie at 8:15, Mission Impossible at 8:30, Barbie at 8:45, Oppenheimer at 9, and Jesus Barbie Christ. Again at 9:30. Jesus. So it's fucking like to get, it took us 35 minutes to get popcorn at the cinema. Ooh, it was crazy. So obviously the 8 o'clock showing of Oppenheimer was next to us and we heard the noise of the bomb from the theater. I went to see it with Kira and a friend of hers and I looked at them and I was like, oh my god, it's true.
But was it like the blast that you heard, like the
after the silence, you know how you it then
yeah.
hits
yeah, yeah it hits
that's
yeah.
what we heard that's what we heard and yeah, it was okay. loud, like as in there was no mistake. It wasn't like, what's the loud noise in Barbie? It was like, yo, Oppenheimer's on next door, I guess.
What do you guys think of the explosion scene? Because I heard a lot of people were like not impressed with it because
I think it was phenomenal. Like
the mushroom cloud was apparently CGI, but only the mushroom cloud, like when everyone was like looking at it. But and people were not happy with the sound design, I heard, which I don't agree with, to be honest.
So,
like people wanted a boom to happen immediately, and maybe there's a point to that, but I think when they did the silence first and then it hit, I think it hit way yeah, harder.
Absolutely.
I agree with that, but before we talk about anything with VFX, I think we should just address the fact that like only about 20% of the VFX artists that worked on the movie got credited, which I think
really?
I think you guys would agree that's not right. And before we move into any discourse about what the VFX looks like, we should just say that they all should have been credited and there shouldn't have been so much talk from the production that there's no VFX used, basically.
What do you mean not been credited? Like they used their stuff and not credited them in the movie?
They're not in the credits, yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. That's so weird.
Only about 20%.
Is it because Nolan is like pretentious and doesn't want to admit that he used VFX or something?
There's no explanation because everyone's
so stupid.
Everyone's on strike now, right? So there's no interviews happening.
Yeah.
Anything like that. So,
bruh.
But yeah, they're credited on the website of the VFX house, but not in the theatrical credits. Yeah.
Not where it should be, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, maybe, I just wanted to mention that to make sure that we're aware and we think it's not right, but we just need to talk about the movie, right? So,
yeah.
Dude, so Albert Einstein.
I do want to say something. I thought Albert Einstein sounded a lot like one of our teachers, if you know what I'm talking about. The guy who... Moi Pick.
Oh! What did you guys think of Killian Murphy's Dutch? I thought it sucked.
Bro, it was not Dutch, German. Bruh.
But apparently he learned 40,000 words in Dutch. I didn't know there was fucking 40,000 words in Dutch, dude.
Ava, my girlfriend pointed out, apparently the assistant of a videographer on Oppenheimer is Dutch.
Hoytema, dude. It's Hoytema.
And then
it can be American. No. There's a lot of immigration there.
To be honest, I didn't understand. Maybe they needed that scene to introduce Robbie, like his friend. But yeah. I didn't understand the inclusion. Like, but they didn't have to include it. I know it's true, but it didn't add anything to the movie, in my opinion. It just made like a bad point of Killian Murphy's Dutch. I did hear some Dutch words. When I heard it the second time, I think maybe he was speaking Dutch, but in a German, heavy German accent.
Yeah,
I disagree. Thinking about some stuff I've read now, it actually might make sense rather than just how it could be factual. It's not likely, but I'm just going to give another side to the argument. So I think it does just demonstrate a couple of things, right? So it introduced him to Robbie, and also I think by him learning Dutch in 6 weeks kind of just demonstrates the kind of mind the guy has. You know what I mean? Yeah. And maybe the reason it sounds so German, and it could just be because Killian Murphy thinks it's German, right? Maybe. Who knows?
But Oppenheimer studied.
He was fluent in German. So probably to learn Dutch, he related a lot to German words.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I may be getting Murphy worked that in. I don't know. I'm just giving side to the argument here.
No, that may be realistic, to be honest. Like, yeah. You can't learn Dutch in six weeks and then give a lecture on it fluently in Dutch. You gotta...
Yeah. You know what? Most unrealistic scene in the movie, because if that was real life, then I'd be like,
even from the beginning when Robbie was talking to like a Dutch student, he was like, how surprising. I was like, that's not how Dutch people
sound. Also, like, he's like, I can help you with the English if you like. And the Netherlands is regarded as one of the most like English speaking, non-English speaking countries ever.
But
let me just talk about how Albert Einstein just popped into the scene. It felt like an Avengers cameo, man. It really, dude, we were so high. Nino was laughing his shit off. The whole theater was silent, by the way. When Albert Einstein in the montage sequence, when all the scientists were like this like montage cuts, and then Albert Einstein pops up, and then dude, Nino laughed his like
There was this scene where like a cap pulls out, and then Albert Einstein just is behind it, and he just walking toward Oppenheimer, and well, it was just so funny.
I had a similar thing as well, where it's like when he met Heisenberg, I was just like in my head, do
Walter,
you sussy gussy. It's like Oppenheimer approaches Heisenberg and goes, "You've been acting kind of..." Oh no, the guy, what's his name? The guy that's played by. What's his name? He was imprisoned in Denmark, and they got him. They brought him to New Mexico.
What?
You guys know who I'm talking about. He was imprisoned in Mexico. He was imprisoned in Denmark. Okay. All right, no need to be so Dutch, dude. All right, fine. He was imprisoned in Denmark, and he was one of the scientists from Germany. And then they brought him to Oppenheimer, but he was like, "I'm not going to help you make the bomb."
Oh, you know what I'm talking about? Bohr.
Yeah,
something. Bohr.
So he just comes like, this is a joke now. So he just comes from Denmark and he arrives and he's like, Heisenberg's been acting kind of sus lately, guys. He's working with the Nazis.
To be honest, when I was watching it, I felt so happy for like a lot of the actors in it. Like I felt happy for Josh from Breaking Josh, Huey, isn't it? The guy who played Robbie. He literally only plays like, I don't know if you guys seen Harold and Kumar, but he plays like one of their Jew friends. He's always high. Like this guy always played like comedy roles, and now he's like, and he was really good at it.
Can I say who else he looks like?
Who?
Yeah.
I didn't see it myself. He talks a little bit like him though.
I need the codes, man.
You can tell him to go shit in his hat.
Who else was there? Who else was in there in that movie?
The guy who actually, like, the guy who leaves the thing to watch the bomb explode, like, outside. He was also a Norseman. He plays a traitor. The guy from Hereditary, the Indian, the guy with Indian descent. Who else? Fucking. So I'm the only one who recognized him, but the other guy on the end of the trial, the guy,
the only person in the world.
No, the guy who was like talking the whole time, not his lawyer, but the last scene where like he's arguing with Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
That guy is also in a show on HBO called Win in Time. No, not him. But also Han Solo, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, not Han Solo, but the guy that played Han Solo in Solo.
Rami Malek wasn't it? Fuck, I forgot.
He wasn't advertised, right? He wasn't advertised.
I think he was, no.
He wasn't on the posters here, at least. He wasn't like, well, his name wasn't there.
The poster is only...
No, but his name wasn't on the poster.
No. He didn't have that big of a role, though.
No,
well, he like saved Oppenheimer.
He saved Oppenheimer.
Yeah, okay, yeah, true. But in terms of screen time, not a lot. So,
but there's many people like Josh Peck also has like 30 seconds on screen. Probably.
I can't believe Josh from Drake and Josh dropped the atom bomb.
Spherical. Okay, so one thing while we're talking about the cast, the thing I mentioned earlier, people have been talking a bit of shit about someone in the movie. It's about Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
And so there's a thing in India. And
the CGI dress.
Yeah, but so that's one thing. That's not that bad. So basically in India, there a lot of people are boycotting the movie and are offended by it because she's reading the I can't all think of the name of the text right now. Yeah.
You yeah. Know what I'm
talking about. The Sanskrit.
Yeah.
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 So
yeah.
That's an Indian religious text, and they're reading that while they're having sex. So it's offensive there. So people are boycotting the movie because of that.
Bruh. I didn't know that. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
And then there's the part where like they CG a dress onto her when she's naked.
To be honest, then, the CGI looks pretty good.
Of the dress?
Yeah.
Do you think so?
No, I think it looks pretty good. It's very dark. It's a very dark material. It doesn't really react to the lighting.
Yeah. It looked like a dress. It doesn't look like it's just painted over it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, the shape is okay, but the shape is the easy bit.
I saw a post on, I think on an Egyptian Facebook page, and it was like, oh, a version of Oppenheimer with a CGI dress is in the cinemas now. And then the comment is like, I want the naked version.
But yeah, anyway, the other bit is like, there is apparently a lot of stuff like on probably 4chan, realistically, where people were like, not in non- very conservative countries like in America and in Europe, where like they're like, Florence Pugh should cover up, she looks disgusting, she's overweight. And I was like, dude, what are you talking about right now?
Yeah,
like shut up. I thought she looked great and everything. I think there's no need to change, but anyway, people have been trolling her online a lot about it, which I think is very strange.
Yeah,
and I also think that the scenes with her in it, I thought that the sex scene was quite necessary in the context of the movie, actually, because
quite necessary.
Yeah. Because like, you tell me fucking astrophysicist Oppenheimer's ladies, man, I'm not going to fucking believe you until I see him fuck someone. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, come on guys.
Risenheimer, man. Risenheimer.
Exactly. I'm not going to believe that until I see it. You know,
bro, the scene with Emily Blunt and the lawyer, that was also really fucking great scene where she's yes. being questioned and she's like, oh, I don't know. And then like she flips it on him and she slays the trial. I don't know what kind of trial is it, but she slays the other guy and it's really fucking good.
The part where John Krasinski came out and he got turned into like ribbons was pretty cool too. Oh, wrong movie. Sorry.
Dude, don't spoil it, man.
All right, I think let's maybe wrap up a bit there, but I would like to hear rating out of 10 from you guys for Oppenheimer and Barbie. Now that we're right at the end. For short related content. So start now.
Barbie for me, out of 10, it's like 5. Oppenheimer out of 10 is 8.9.
Nigel?
Both are eights.
Nah, okay, cool. They're not equal, man. Come on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's fair.
No, it's no, it's his opinion. That's it. Don't change. Yeah, look,
listen, well, I'm just saying your opinion is wrong, bro.
Blame me, man. All right.
All right.
Flame.
We'll let this Alan talk.
Alan is literally muted. I'm literally.
I feel like you're the one person in the world that will say that they're Alan.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude.
You and Michael Cera are the only ones happy to be Alan.
Yeah.
I think I read a blurb from someone that was like, we were kind of nervous casting Alan because we were afraid that no one would want to do it.
What? That's real.
And the only two people applied are Jesse Eisenberg and Michael Cera.
Yeah.
Now Michael Cera, I don't see anyone else who could play Alan.
I think it would have been a totally different vibe if Jesse Eisenberg did it. It would have been much more like he actually really wants to be with Barbie. And he's eventually going to shoot everyone in Barbie World or Barbie Land if he gets it.
It's really odd that Michael Cera looks so old but also so young at the same time.
Well, they make him look even worse in the movie because he's like, he's the one person that got made look like weird with the doll makeup on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He looks a bit like R.I.P. by the way, Pee Wee Herman. He looks a little bit like Pee-wee Herman in the movie.
I did appreciate though that they really stuck to the source material in Barbie. Like everything they'd shown is an actual product that's been out by the Mattel.
I was pretty shocked by what was it, like Sugar Daddy Ken or what was it again?
Yeah, Sugar Daddy Ken.
Sugar Daddy Ken. I was pretty sure that was a real thing. It's pretty funny. Anyway, to my ratings, I already did Barbie, so 6 out of 10 for Barbie, I think. Yeah. Solid, just above average. Say funnier than a lot of comedies I've seen, right? So that's why it's a 6. Mm-hmm. And I think 9 out of 10 for Oppenheimer. I'm not fucking with the points. Yeah, for me, Inception is 10 out of 10. That's why it's... I don't think there's anything wrong with that movie. I think Oppenheimer is a little bit long, just like 25 minutes too long.
I actually think it wasn't like, I didn't feel it was 3 hours when I was watching it. Like, I think it was. You're always like, your attention span is always active during the whole movie. Like, yeah. There's no downtime.
The only thing that I kind of didn't like at the end was that scene between RDJ and Oppenheimer, did like the interrogation scenes where they just go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I kind of got lost. But that may be because I was high.
It's because he's an Allen brain. Didn't get it.
No. There it is. It was hard to follow, in my opinion. A bit.
I didn't find it hard to follow at all, actually. I thought it was pretty... like. So I'm thinking about other Nolan movies, right?
Well, then I'm just stupid, then. That's all.
Inception was harder to follow. Tenet was way harder to follow. Interstellar was harder to follow. I would even say... what's that movie about the two magicians?
What? Which one?
The movie about the two magicians, man. Oh, it's a really good movie.
Oh, The Prestige.
The Prestige was harder to follow because they had like the twin magic shit and the ghosts and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so I thought it was one of his easier movies to follow, actually. It was all pretty factual. Yeah. I didn't understand the physics. Like, fuck that, but who did?
Well, the ones who built the bomb did.
I don't even think they did, man. You know what they didn't, because they thought they were going to blow up the world when they set that shit off. So they didn't understand it.
They said the chances is near zero.
That's like me saying, what are the chances you're going to have a shit when you wake up in the morning? Yeah, near zero, but it happens every morning. So, you know.
Well, also, we completely forgot Matt Damon also killed it in that movie. Don DeHaan, the guy who played Green Goblin.
Dane DeHaan was really good, yeah. Actually. Yeah. Yeah.
The guy who always plays weirdos, like a polka dot guy from Suicide Squad.
Oh, and he's also
friends with Scott Lang and Ant-Man. Who? And he's also one of the crooks in The Dark Knight.
Yeah, who are we talking
the
about
guy
right
who
now?
The guy who writes the letter about Oppenheimer and sends it to the FBI.
Yes.
He doesn't play one of the thugs in The Dark Knight. That's what threw me off. He plays an insane asylum patient that Joker manipulates into doing something. So, you know, maybe if you fucking paid attention to that movie, you wouldn't have said what you said in the last podcast.
Well, maybe if it was based on factual events, then I would have paid attention to it.
It was.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. Batman's real.
It wasn't.
Okay. All right. What was our... Oh, yeah. So, Nigel, you're going to explain something to us. Like, we're poopy. Like we're going to flip it now. Nigel gets to be Ken, and we have to be Alan and listen. So, yes.
What's that? Baldur's Gate.
Oh, Baldur's Gate. What's going on, Baldur's Gate?
Bro, I don't know. Is this really a big
game? All right, and that's our show, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week. Actually, GT Pod on all social medias, TikTok, Instagram.
No. Well, so here's the thing. We're all getting devs here. We're all kind of being... We have to follow what's going on with Baldur's Gate, because it could be a very consequential game. There was a small controversy going on when, the game... showed a lot of the developer showed a lot of new gameplay and stuff like that. And I think one of the Twitter threads that started it all was I'm not going to name drop him either way. He's a game developer as well. I think he made a game that's already on Steam. It's been doing kind of well, actually. And he said that Baldur's Gate 3 is like an anomaly in game dev, because it's like not a lot of game dev companies can do what Baldur's Gate 3 is about to do, or Larian Studios is about to do. And one of his big points was that, like, basically the consumers shouldn't have these kinds of high, really, really high standards every time, like these other companies drop a game. Like, they shouldn't expect that Larian Studios would set this huge standard from now on. But is
Baldur's Gate considered a AAA game?
For sure.
I don't understand.
People that have worked on it.
I don't really understand the take, to be honest.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah,
because you can also make the same take about GTA 5 or about Red Dead Redemption 2 or about like.
But I actually just finished Red Dead like 3 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
my 4-year playthrough finally ended. Well, because I started it when I bought the Xbox Series S the first time. Yeah, actually, the first time I ever started it was like the day after it came out. So how long was that? 6 years ago?
You're playing it in real time. You know, let Arthur grow. Yeah.
For
real.
Guys, I have bad news. I have tuberculosis. No, but I just finished it. And like, I think it would be fair to hold Rockstar, whatever the next game is, to be that good. I think that's totally fair because it to be not better, like as good. I think that's fair because they've set their own quality standard. They proved they could do it, right? I think it will be fair. Should Baldur's Gate actually be good? Because it's not out. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, you can play it right now. Yeah. It's in early access for like 3 years already. So, yeah,
but okay. But
what's the game? Can you explain the game to me? Because I haven't heard anything about it. What's the game?
It's basically Dungeons and Dragons. I think Baldur's Gate is based on that franchise, right? Of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, yeah. It's similar to.
But is it like an action adventure, third person, top down?
I think the gameplay is similar to Dragon Age, right?
Oh, okay. Actual D&D, like actual D&D almost. You take turns, each character, you create your own character, you're in this fantasy world, and turn-based.
That's kind of dope, though.
But it's super.
As a person who plays D&D, that's dope.
Exactly. So it's really, really for that audience. That's the thing. And so again, about the Twitter thread, what he's saying is that, in my opinion, what I understood from it is that he's saying that I think where he's coming from is from the expectations of the consumers when AAA games release are set to these like really sometimes I would say unrealistic standards to where they boycott the game and then the studio, it affects heavily the studio and the employees in it, which eventually could cause people to lose jobs because the studio shut down, whatever. In my opinion, that happened with Cyberpunk because...
I was about to say that, but also if you think about it, it's because Cyberpunk released in a broken state now because I think Cyberpunk now delivers on everything CD Projekt Red has promised the game will deliver on.
That's an overstatement though, because I think he's really pushing, and like I work on games, like I think expectations are high. It's one of the things that stresses me out the most about when there's been a game we've been working on for a long time.
Yeah.
At least, you've been working on it for over a year. I've been working on it for 2 years.
Game development is a high risk.
Like, I'm shitting my pants about when it comes out because people are probably, someone's going to shit in it, right? And that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
But I also think companies need to take all responsibility as well. If we look at the example of Cyberpunk, they promised a lot of shit that just isn't there. They also promised the game would work on all platforms when it came out. It just fucking didn't. They have to take responsibility for that. They can control consumer expectations. They can show gameplay whenever. So I feel if companies show gameplay early and be like, this is what it is, this is what we have.
And I don't think if CD Projekt Red was like, okay, the game is not finished, we're going to delay the release, I don't think a lot of people will be that angry. I think it's because they had some shit with the investors and who wanted the game to be released on that date. That's why it was released in a broken state. There's a lot of good developers that release near perfect game at launch. Santa Monica, the new God of War was basically pretty much bug free when it was first launched. Spider-Man, Red Dead Redemption 2 as well. Those games release bug free, but also those companies also know how to control the consumer's expectation because Rockstar worked on such insane beyond imagination games. When a new one is announced, people, obviously we're like, this has to be better than GTA 5 or Red Dead Redemption 2.
But if you take what Red Dead Redemption actually is, right? One versus two.
Yeah.
What's the difference? Okay, there's different meters you have to take care of.
Yeah.
It didn't change the game. The world is better. The world is better. The story is better. The core gameplay is really fucking similar. Really similar.
It's the same, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing with Rockstar in general. Like, if you take it to the core, every mission in Red Dead Redemption, almost every mission is the same. Is you take a horse or you go this place, some shit goes down, you have to shoot your way out. That's pretty much almost every... And I heard some criticism because Rockstar really... tries to convey that all their open world games are like sandbox games. But in Red Dead Redemption 2, there's a lot of missions that you have to do it in one certain way. But I agree with it, but I didn't feel that when I was playing it. I think the story was told better Maybe. And I think more like in retrospect, the more I think about it, I was like, it's insane how this game performed on the PS4, which is also the game that has like Knack 2, for example. Like the graphics, the ability, like all the physics, the ragdoll animation. I actually, my favorite part in Red Dead Redemption is just the ragdoll animation. I like shooting guys because I like to see them falling off their horses and dying.
Yeah. So my overall point... Back to my overall point about the Red Dead thing or the Rockstar thing is like, or my overall point in general about like companies. Yeah, I think that people get a bit too excited. I kind of agree with them there. However, yeah. It is totally and objectively the game maker's company to set the expectation. So for example, with Rockstar, when they announced Red Dead, they weren't like, this is going to change the game of open world experiences. They just released a very solid iteration on what they did before. And that's smart because that's difficult. It's difficult to improve, but you're not rewriting the wheel again. The wheel, right? Whereas with something like Cyberpunk, they did reinvent it, and they promised even more reinvention than the reinvention they did, and they promised it too early. So I think that's, you look at a company that did it right with a sequel or with a new game or whatever, like Rockstar did it well. Ultimately, I think CD Projekt Red have done a very good job of repairing their reputation and repairing the game. It's super solid now. But like you have that crossroads where this is not just a consumer problem. It's a company problem. It's the money people problem, the way they overhype the games. Sorry, and you can get back to what you're going to say.
So the thing that I was about to say is that I think sometimes the media itself really puts fuel in that hype train to like really explode the expectations of consumers. I think I haven't heard of Baldur's Gate 3 until those like the media started like popping up articles about it, but this game's been out for like 3 years and I haven't heard about it at all. It's not my type of game, but now that I look at how beautiful the game is, it was like, you know, this game's sick, you know, it looks sick. But here's the thing, like they say, oh, there's going to be 2 million lines of dialogue. There's going to be, the game has 170 something hours of cinematics, more, and they say more than Game of Thrones to like really reel in the fucking millennial, like the very old people in this audience. But so in my opinion, after that articles pop up, I think in a couple days later, that Twitter thread popped up as well, where they talk about this. And I think in the same Twitter thread, the same guy says that at some point, it might happen, right? But Larian Studios has set the expectations of the consumer and their standard of a company super, super high that the next game they work on might be also their downfall, depending on how it goes.
And from my opinion, that's totally their problem.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? You can't blame a consumer. That's like saying you go to a restaurant, you cook someone a really good meal, and they shouldn't expect a really good meal next time.
Yeah,
next time. You know what I mean? No. Like it's
exactly.
I understand the pressure. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but like you have a responsibility when you're marketing something to market it for what it is and not for what
exactly.
should be. And to be honest, if they can reach this quality bar now, I don't know why the guy thinks they can't do it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, we thought about CD Projekt that they would deliver
one of the greatest games. But I think if you look at the game now, like, they did.
Not on everything, also, I think.
But The Witcher 3 also wasn't perfect on all fronts.
Another good example is No Man's Sky.
Yes.
That game promised so much shit before it was released. It released to like, also like it was filled with bugs. Like everything that was promised was not there. But to the credit of the studio, they kept working on it. They kept adding stuff. And now it's actually what the initial promises was. So it depends on the responsibility of the developer or of the company.
And how to set expectations, what Rob said earlier, right?
Which I think Sony are really good at, and they're really good at it, but also from just what I know. Sony? Yeah. What I know as well is that if you've proven to Sony, this is some inside information, but nothing serious. If you've proven to them that, and you can just read this as well. It's not like inside. You can read it like into the situation. You've proven to them that you can make a hit game. They trust you for another one.
Yep.
At that point, it's exactly. on. They leave it up to the creators, basically.
And it creates a reputation. Like now, even though it's not what like it's explicitly said, but now people expect that any game that is released by Sony is going to be like bug free or as little as bugs in it from like day one, and they can just like buy the game, download it, and start playing from day one without worrying about if it's going to be.
Also, when is the last time a Sony game bombed? Like, I can't remember.
I think Days Gone. But it didn't really bomb that much.
Even bomb.
It was like the least story heavy game, or like the least. It's like saying it's yeah.
That's a great example of expectation management too, where they got it wrong, because the developer has done a lot of interviews since the main guy, creative director, I guess, behind it, where the game is exactly what they wanted it to be, but it's not what it was sold. It's not what it was sold as.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. I played a little bit of it. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't like into it immediately. It's not really my type of game, but I didn't necessarily hate it.
I don't even know if you can really call it one a failure. I think it still did pretty well.
It is. It's not like a failing game. It's just like the least successful game they released in the last 5 years or something.
Yeah. No. It's-
but all I gotta say is that, like, to just finish it off, it's like, whatever happens, like, we just got to respect the amount of effort that Larian Studios did on this game. It's like, from what I understood from the articles and like I read a bit of the updates they did during their early access, they did like just an amazing job just like working on that game. And then at the end of the day, like I also listened to a small interview with one of the devs. He just said they were addressing that Twitter thread, small controversy thing. And he said that, it's like, hey, we're just working on our game. And that's, I think, how it should be. Just like, yeah, just work on your game. This game's going to be sick. I hope. Probably is. Not my type of game, but I'm going to give it a shot. Coming. We're not promoting it or anything. It's coming in 2 days as we're recording it. But it's pretty interesting because it's like, so they just basically started the development. They started development 2017 and they released early access 2020. And then from there on, they just got a lot of feedback, that's how they also got some money, some financing, on that game. And then now they're going to release it fully. And I think, wow, this is like just a good model, just a good model to work from. And yeah, it's like wish lots of luck to Larian Studios. I think they're going to do very well.
Will it
be a huge game? It would be, but I think it's not going to hit all the audiences because it's such a heavy fantasy D&D game. Not a lot of people are like that. I think it's, I don't know.
But they know that there's not many games that hit all the audiences, right? You're really talking about FIFA, Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Battlefield, right? Those are the games that hit everyone. Every other game, for me, should look for something specific. Should look for a group of specific people.
Yeah.
Because...
True.
I think when you see games, a lot of games fail, especially like the kind of multiplayer that are like loot based or like skin based or whatever. You see them try to go for mass appeal when the original gameplay hook is actually super specific, and then it fails because the expectation again of like what it was going to sell was probably a bit too high. So I mean, if you're talking about something like, for example, I can't even think of something, but just like
it's be real time, guys.
My point is that like most games start off with something pretty specific, unless it's like you have a license, right? Like FIFA is for football fans technically, but it's kind of for a lot of people. But like Arma, for example, is for people who love really realistic army combat communication tactical based shooter, right? Yeah. And they stuck to that and they can make enough money to keep a lot of people employed. So I think that there's like a lot of good examples of give me an example of a game that isn't Call of Duty or an EA game or a Ubisoft game that's for everybody. That makes a lot
Fortnite.
Of money.
Fortnite.
Halo.
Fortnite.
Yeah, Fortnite. Apex.
I would also
Legends.
Say GTA 5 Online.
Fair enough.
Really? Okay.
Fall Guys, Among Us. Maybe you can say Rocket League, but... I think Rocket League is easier to pick up. Like, it's easy to pick up, but it's really hard to master. But I think everyone can play Rocket League.
When you're looking at the games you just listed, they're specific niche is mass appeal.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the whole thing about it, yeah.
And what I mean is I think that games that have a specific niche, and that might be mass appeal, but then the whole thing is designed for mass appeal when they're designed for something specific, you know? It's not like we're trying to please this person with that, we're trying to please this person with that. Because ultimately, mass appeal, what is that? It's probably something that's easy to pick up. It's something you can play with your friends. It's something that's free. That's mass appeal, right? Something that's specific is like armor, like I mentioned, or even Madden is pretty specific because the sport's not that big. And it's quite tactical. So, like, I just think those games do better and they're more fun.
Yeah. I think because they are, like you said, they are meant for that specific audience. So they really focus on what that audience wants to see. Big example is the WWE games, like the recent, the last two games. Really fucking great. It's everything. In my opinion, I think the last two games are like probably one of the best, like since 2K took over the WWE games. And if you play them, it's like really, really like even if you're not a wrestling fan, because I was playing it a couple of days ago and I had like some friends over and they were just watching and they were just impressed with the level of like fidelity that this game has. That's just a wrestling game. Like, for example, the wrestlers sweat or you can see bruises on them with, like throughout the match. That's really like, that's an insane detail to include for someone who, for like a game that is very niche.
Yeah, I think when you're talking 2K WWE games, probably looking at 16, 22, and 23 as the top three.
16, really?
Yeah.
I think 19 is better than 16.
I don't think 19 was very good. Anyway, let's not get into that debate. We'll talk about that. Talk about that somewhere else. Alrighty, what time are we doing here, guys? Should we wrap it up? Yeah, I think this is a good moment to wrap it up.
All right. Well,
bye.
Don't forget to follow the GMSD Podcast on Instagram and TikTok at GMSDPod.